This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, celebrating the African-American spirit here on WUBS, sponsored by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Stay with us for the 10-week series on the life and love and creation of African-American music in America.
Talked about shows you born.
This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, celebrating the African-American spirit here on WUBS 89.7 FM, brought to you by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. As we continue our talk about African-American music and its development, there's one person that we most times forget about. His name was James Rhys Europe. He was born in 1881, died in 1919, and he was said to be our benefactor and inspiration. He was the Martin Luther King of music. These are the words from UB Blake, who we'll hear from later. So today we're going to talk about band music a little bit and then the influence of ragtime. So James Rhys Europe was born in Mobile, Alabama in 1881. His family moved while he was young to Washington, D.C. In 1904, he moved to New York City, starting out as a pianist. He made connections quickly in the thriving scene of black theater music and began writing and landing one of his songs, Gay Lutina, in the Colin Johnson's Shoefly Regiment play of 1906. The next year, he composed music for The Black Politician, and in 1908, he became music director for Cole and Johnson's The Red Moon. Also contributing two songs was UB Blake. However, in 1910, James Rhys Europe formed the Clef Club and became its president. This is very important because this organization not only put together its own orchestra and chorus, but it served as a union and contracting agency for black musicians, because up to this time, the music unions were segregated. Soon it had as many as 200 men on the roster. And on May 12, 1912, the Clef Club Symphony Orchestra put on a concert of Negro music in Carnegie Hall. The concert was a tremendous success. The 125-man orchestra included a large contingent of banjos and mandolins and presented music by exclusively black composers. By this time, James Rhys Europe believed that although black musicians respected white music of quality, they did not need to play or imitate it. Instead, they had their own music to play, which people of all races would want to hear. He eventually left the Clef Club in 1913 and formed another organization called the Temple Club. The Stew Club served much of the same purpose as the Clef Club, booking black musicians for dances, which was sweeping New York social life. In 1914, Europe formed an association with the popular dance duo Vernon and Irene Castle. Europe invented the turkey trot with the Castles and the foxtrot, which is still popular today. James Rhys Europe also made a series of recordings in 1914 with the Victor Record Company. These recordings show that Europe's music was like no other music produced at the same time. Neither jazz nor ragtime or the recordings combined complex melodies and arrangements with driving rhythms. When World War I became a reality for America, James Rhys Europe signed up and was commissioned as a lieutenant for the 50th Regiment under Colonel Haywood. He was ordered to put together the best band he could muster, and he did so, going as far afield as Puerto Rico to find the musicians he wanted. His friend Noble Sissel served as drum major. This regiment became the 369th Regiment, known as the Hellfighters, and proceeded to amaze continental Europe, especially France, with his brilliant and original music. Some fresh musicians, reading from the band's parts, tried to duplicate Europe's band sound, but could not, which only caused the admiration to increase. In an interview, James Rhys Europe graciously acknowledged this appreciation and attributed it to the fact that his musicians played their own black music. Europeans, he argued, simply recognized his music as good because it was original and intrinsically worthy as music. The United States press did not fail to notice Europe's fame overseas, and he was welcomed home in 1919 as a hero. He embarked on a tour with the Hellfighters band and played one show in New York to rave reviews. Unfortunately, he was killed by his drummer the next night in Boston. But thing about James V's Europe that's so important, at the time of his death, he was the best known African American band leader in the United States. He was the first black officer to lead troops in combat in World War I, and he was the first ever black man to receive a public funeral in the city of New York. So we're going to hear James V's Europe's music. This is called the Clef Club March. We've been listening to the Clef Club March, written by James Rhys Europe, born 1881, died in 1919. So this is band music that was between ragtime and jazz and swing, but his influence was huge on the band music scene. We don't talk about James Rhys Europe as we should. We talk about John Philip Sousa, but here was a black man leading all these black men in music at a time when blacks could not be part of the white musicians' union. And to give a concert at Carnegie Hall on May 2nd, 1912, his Clef Club Symphony was outstanding. However, before James Rhys Europe was born, there was a man named Scott Joplin who was born in 1868 and died in 1917, known as the father of ragtime. And ragtime was a unique American syncopated musical phenomenon with a strong presence in musical composition, entertainment, and scholarship for over a century. It emerged in its published form during the mid-1890s and quickly spread across the continent via published compositions. By the early 1900s, ragtime flooded the music publishing industry. Ragtime, a genre of music compositions for piano, generally in a duple meter, and containing a highly syncopated treble lead over a rhythmic, steady bass. A ragtime composition is usually composed of three or four contrasting sections or strains, each one being 16 to 32 meters in length. What's interesting about ragtime is that it developed in the Midwest and eventually congregated in Missouri and in Illinois and produced numerous composers, including Scott Joplin. Ragtime, the word, probably began its life as a description of musical meter and certainly preceded the advent of the music of Joplin. It was part of the late 19th century's lexicon to use time as a suffix to describe the kind of music by the characteristics of its rhythm. For example, waltzes were referred to being in waltz time. March time and jig time also described the meter, basic rhythm and function of style. Almost certainly, however, the term is a contraction for ragged time, denoting a style of playing piano or banjo where the melody is broken up into short syncopated rhythms, while a steady overall beat is either played on the piano or the banjo. Americans were first exposed to ragtime at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. It was reported that some 27 million people passed through the fair's gates between May and October of that year. In 1886, rag or ragtime was used to describe this newly published music that still used the parodies of coon songs of the black culture speech of the minstrel show. Scott Joplin was born in 1868 and enjoyed great success in Sedalia, Missouri, where he studied music at the George R. Smith College and played with several ensembles, among them the Queen City Cornet Band. He opened his own piano studio and taught and encouraged other composers in the ragtime industry. His life spanned the unsettled post-Civil War years, the much of World War I. His music embraced aspects of African-American popular culture that thrived during that critical period. It also embraced elements of his formal training. One of the things that was interesting is the publishing of this music. The regular flow of ragtime was through the city of St. Louis, and the rest of the state created a great demand for accommodations and amenities for travelers. Missouri and St. Louis were destined, as by its location, to be the area of commercial, social, and cultural change. Since the early 19th century, St. Louis has served as a midpoint and stopover for north-south traffic on our largest river, and when going west was a national imperative, the city was the gateway to the West, still known as that today. During the 1880s, black entrepreneurs prospered in this sporting district of St. Louis, known as the Chestnut Valley. James L. Turpin, a black businessman from Savannah, Georgia, made St. Louis his home in 1887 and opened a saloon there called the Silver Dollar. His son, Tom, followed closely in his father's footsteps, and in 1897 opened his first saloon. The same year, his son Tom, also a self-taught pianist, had his composition, Harlem Rag, published by a local lawyer. By 1900, Tom Turpin had acquired sufficient capital to open a new saloon and brothel, the Rosebud. His two young proteges, Joe Jordan and Louis Chavain, frequented the establishment. With the constant, rocking, buoyant sound of ragtime, Turpin, Jordan, and Chavin, and many other enthusiastic prospects of the new music made the Rosebud and St. Louis the capital of ragtime. The most influential and memorable publisher of this music was John Stark, a Civil War veteran and ice cream salesman who loved music. He settled in Sedalia, Missouri in 1886, opened a music store, and eventually turned to publishing. Stark met Scott Joplin in 1899, when Scott Joplin came into Stark's store to demonstrate his still unpublished Maple Leaf Rag. Although Stark was impressed by the musicality of the piece, the technical difficulty of the piece led him to question its saleability. With some encouragement from his son, John Stark agreed to publish the Maple Leaf Rag, thus beginning a profitable business relationship for himself and Scott Joplin and ensuring immortality for ragtime. By 1914, the Maple Leaf Rag had sold 1 million copies, and John Stark had amassed over 50 rags in his catalog. And here is the Maple Leaf Rag. ¶¶ Peg by Scott Joplin. He's also known for his opera, Tremonisha, which is about a young freed woman, 18 years of age, who, after being taught to read by a white woman, tries to lead her community against the influence of conjurers who are shown to be preying on ignorance and superstition. Tremonisha is abducted and is about to be thrown into a wasp nest when her friend Remus rescues her. The opera runs 70 minutes and was lost to the world until the 1970s when it was resurrected, along with Scott Joplin's music, which appeared in the movie The Sting, starring Robert Redford. But Tremonisha has now been performed several times, and we're going to hear the final chorus. It's called A Real Slow Drag, Scott Joplin's finale to Tremonisha.
Stop and move backward to the dream.
slow drag from the finale of Treemonisha by Scott Joplin, which was first published in 1911, but languished in exile for a while until 1972, when it was premiered in Atlanta, Georgia, with Dr. T.J. Anderson putting it all together. Scott Joplin, the father of ragtime, but also in that ragtime movement was a man named U.B. Blake. He was one of the most important figures in the early 20th century of African-American music, and whose longevity made him a storehouse of the history of ragtime and early jazz music and culture. He was born in 1887, 19 years after Scott Joplin. And at age 16, he was born in Baltimore, and at age 16, he wrote his first composition called Sounds of Africa, later retitled The Charleston Rag. His career really did not take off until he met a man named Noble Sissel in 1915. And between Blake and Sissel, they wrote many hits together. Blake, Sissel, and James Reese Europe began collaborating on a musical called Shuffle Along in 1916, but were interrupted by World War I and Sissel and Europe's military career overseas. Europe and Sissel returned to the United States in 1919, but James Reese Europe died shortly after returning from that place. And Blake and Sissel continued working on the musical until it premiered in 1921. We're going to hear U.B. Blake in his own words. This is from a concert in Berlin in 1972, as he plays and talks about the Charleston Rag, U.B. Blake.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Can you hear me? Is this on? Yeah? Okay. You know, when I was on the stage with my partner, Noble Sissel, we didn't have these things. You had to fill an audience no matter how many were there, see? But tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to play you the first number that I composed in 1899. I knew you were going to say, I knew you were going to say that. Well, I tell you what gives me the license to say that. I was born in Baltimore in 1883, the 7th day of February. Now, may I say it right now? Charleston Rag, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
UB Blake performing on the piano in 1972, The Charleston Rag, which he wrote in 1899. UB Blake lived to be 96 years old, and in the 1970s, there was a revival of ragtime and early jazz, and he gave talks well into his 90s. And the musical UB in 1979 was created from his works. UB Blake had a partner named Noble Sissel. Noble Sissel was born in Indianapolis on July 10, 1889. He attended Butler University and toured with the Thomas Jubilee Singers and became a protege of James Reese Europe. That name appears again, the great band leader. In 1915, Noble Sissel met UB Blake, and they formed the writing partnership together. Their first song, It's All Your Fault, was introduced by Sophie Tucker and became a hit. And so we're going to hear now Noble Sissel's orchestra performing from the year 1931, Noble Sissel's band. Sissel's orchestra in 1931. The pounding that you probably heard in that piece was actually tap dancing going on in the background. So here we have James Reese Europe, who taught all these men except for Scott Joplin. You got Scott Joplin, the father of ragtime, UB Blake, and Noble Sissel coming together. And all these men helped to create the next thing we're going to talk about in our next show, which is about early jazz and swing. This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, Celebrating the African American Spirit on WUBS 89.7 FM here in South Bend, Indiana. This program brought to you by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Thank you.